Laser beams, acrobatics, theatrical distractions, and a team of 11 or more is what most of us think of when we hear the word heist. But this past weekend, the Louvre in Paris was robbed of millions worth of jewels in what many would describe as an elaborate smash and grab. So how did these thieves manage to get away successfully, and what did they end up taking? I'm Jason Acuna, and this is Unbothered by WFSU. Hey, Regan.
Hey, Jason.
Have you seen any good heist movies recently?
Gosh, I feel like the Ocean's series were like the last heist movies I can really remember watching.
I mean, those are kind of the premier heist movies, I feel like. And that does lead me to a general question I have, not for you, but just for the audience. Does anybody know where Brad Pitt and George Clooney were this past weekend? Because something happened.
They were hanging out with me.
Were they? Okay, that's good. I'm glad they have an alibi because I was a little worried that they would be at the center of an investigation because what happened in Paris this past weekend, I don't know if you heard, the Louvre was robbed.
No.
And it seemed like it was right out of one of their movies. And I was starting to get concerned that maybe those movies were just practice for the real thing.
Oh, goodness. No, I think they were definitely not anywhere near Paris.
Did you hear about this heist, though?
No. George Clooney and Matt Damon told me nothing about that, or Brad Pitt. My bad.
I didn't mention Matt Damon was involved.
Well, they come as a trio, as some may know.
All right. Interesting. Well, let me tell you about this heist, Regan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tell me more. Haven't heard of it.
So it happened over the weekend, and the whole thing was incredibly fast. That's why I'm saying it seems like it was out of a movie, with the planning and preparation that must have been needed. So it started at 9:30 a.m. Mm-hmm. A truck with a ladder pulled up to outside of the Louvre, and thieves began climbing up this ladder. It only took them 4 minutes from climbing up the ladder into getting into the building, and using angle grinders to start cutting into the display cases of some of the crown jewels of France's past royalty.
Wow, a four-minute heist, you're right. That does sound like a group of people who've probably had some practice.
Exactly. So from 9:34 a.m. is when they first got the angle grinders onto the glass, and by 9:38, they were already exiting through a back window and leaving on scooters.
Scooters.
Yes, it was a very, very French exit to leave on scooters. And they actually dropped one of the things they meant to steal, maybe because they were on scooters rather than other forms of transportation. But so 8 minutes from the start of the heist to the end was 8 minutes. And so this all happened 270 yards from the Mona Lisa. So fairly close to some other works that we definitely know about. And they ended up getting off with an estimated $100 million of jewelry and precious metals. And that's not including the historical significance of these pieces that would obviously add to their value. This is just the precious metals and jewels that these
So the value of the jewels is about $100 million. And then if you also calculated the value of the history attached to it, then it would be worth more than that.
I mean, one could argue priceless. However, with the crowns that were taken, they could take the individual jewels out and sell them more easily.
And so we think that's the plan?
Well, we're not entirely sure what their plan is. I mean, we definitely know that they did have a plan, and they do have a plan because it was so meticulously carried out. However, I wanted to know more about this heist and heists in general to know what could be going on. So I sat down with an art historian to learn more.
Hi, my name is Rachel Elspeth Gross. I'm a fashion historian and writer, and I'm very, very interested in what's been happening in Paris.
Absolutely. So I will jump right into the question. So what are your initial thoughts regarding the heist at the Louvre this past weekend?
I mean, it was pretty audacious. The idea that in like 7 or 8 minutes, 3 or 4 guys or people could come in and steal at least $102 million worth of diamonds and other jewels, that's big news, right?
Absolutely. And at what many considered to be the most protected and secured museum in the world.
Yeah, I believe the Louvre is thought to be, you know, the world's most famous, most prestigious museum, and has been thought of that way for hundreds of years. It's a big deal.
Absolutely. And so can you tell me a little bit about what the thieves took? Can you tell me about the history and provenance of these pieces?
Yeah. So it's, depending on how you want to look at it, it's about 8 pieces. Most of them were pieces that had either been given to, commissioned by, or made for Empress Eugenie. And Empress Eugenie is the wife of Napoleon III. and there was a lot of turmoil within the, you know, between the end of Marie Antoinette and French Revolution and Napoleon, and then eventually Napoleon III. But mm-hmm. Napoleon had a lot to do with the development. Napoleon III and Napoleon had a lot to do with the development of the Louvre itself. So it seems sort of interesting to me that those were the pieces taken. One of them is a sapphire tiara necklace and earring set, something that's known as a parure, which is when you have like a bunch of really fancy jewelry that is made to be worn as a set. One of her tiaras, which was designed with, I think it's 212 pearls, 1,998 diamonds, and then separately 992 rose-cut diamonds. There was what's been described a lot in the news as a decorative bow, like in quotes. It's a pin. It's a brooch. It's a very large brooch. I mean, the entire thing is paved in diamonds.
Yeah, to fit that many diamonds, it certainly would have to be.
There's multiple layers. If you think about like chandelier earrings and how they can have, right. It's like that. And it's meant to fall probably from the bust, you know, to draw attention.
Right.
There was another brooch of hers that was taken, which is known as the reliquary brooch. It's another diamond and pearl clad item. I think it's from 1855. And then there were parts of Napoleon I. He had a wedding gift set made of emeralds, and that was another piece that was taken. It was another set that was taken. And in that, there's a necklace that had 32 emeralds, pearls, and then 1,138 diamonds. I mean, we're talking about pieces of jewelry that are more jewel than they are metal holding them together. And
right. This
is not the kind of thing that is even made very often right now in 2025. And if so, it's made by people who can afford to commission such pieces. One was dropped by the thieves, one of Eugenie's crowns, which is equally encrusted, and that has been recovered. So that's good.
Yeah, I did see that it seems that took a little bit of damage, but hopefully they should be able to fix that and have it on display in sometime in the future.
I feel that they are probably the best possible facility with the right conservators and the right craftsmen to repair. And yes, totally sad that it's damaged, but way better than being disappeared.
Yeah, being missing. And so, Rachel, one thing, we mentioned that they dropped Empress Eugenie's crown, but one thing that was near all of these pieces that was taken that was not and is a very high value is the 140-carat Regent diamond. And that piece obviously has a lot of history in and of itself that may have played into why they didn't take it, or maybe not have. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, okay, so there's a few things. I think many people may know that there is potentially, possibly a curse on that particular stone. And while, you know, as an adult human in 2025 who considers herself to be reasonably educated, I doubt that it is a legitimate curse, but that doesn't stop people from being superstitious. Mm-hmm. And perhaps if you're doing something very risky, maybe you don't want to kick the dog, you know? It comes from India. It has a very long, sordid history. Marie Antoinette wore it. It was very close. But again, if we are talking about the goal of breaking things down to component parts for resale, that piece would be a lot harder to take apart. When I look at it, and I have a picture of it here pulled up in front of me, I don't know. My belief is that it's a combination of, they wanted this stuff from the Napoleons. And I believe that the Empress Eugenie collection, the fact that those particular pieces, including that parure, I think that there's a connection there. And that might be me reading too much into it.
Right.
But I really do feel like there's a lot of other stuff there they could have gone for. There's a lot of art. There's a lot of jewelry. And to specifically go after Napoleon III and Eugenie's and then Napoleon's wedding stuff, I don't know. It seems like too many. What does Ian Fleming say? Once is happenstance, twice is coincidence, three times is enemy action. And we've got multiple pieces here. So I don't know.
Right. And yeah, my worry would be, I guess, that going with the Regent diamond would be particularly hard to break down and resale. the fact that they didn't take it would maybe lend a little bit more to the fact that that is maybe what their plan is to break it down and resell, which would
love to be wrong about that.
Exactly, which is why I'm like really hoping they believe in the curse.
Yeah,
and
no,
and that's the reason they didn't take
and
it.
There's romance.
And they didn't want to, yeah, and they didn't want to jinx anything, and they just wanted to, so.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a romance to that too. And I mean, if believing in curses keeps people from stealing treasures that shouldn't belong to anybody, that really belong to humanity, then right. Yeah, sure, please, it's cursed.
Yeah, every piece is cursed, yes, everything in the loop is. And so how does this heist compare to other historical or recent high art heists?
So it's really interesting. I mean, I think that probably the most famous heist, definitely the Louvre, and maybe one of the most famous heists, was when the Mona Lisa was stolen in 1911. And Picasso even got pulled into that. He and his buddies were not exactly thought of as, you know, bright young things. They were viewed as possible criminals. He and his buddies got yanked around, but was actually stolen by a handyman at the museum, and he kept it, hung it in his apartment for a couple years, and eventually just returned it, like you do, I guess.
And he was an Italian patriot, correct?
Yeah.
Who thought it belonged in Italy?
It was a cultural thing, and I'm sure there was, you know, nothing like that ever happens because of one sole reason. I'm sure it was a lifetime of events leading up
right.
to that type of choice. And then, of course, you know, there's all of the Nazi looting that happened during the Second World War. Many pieces were taken. I think more than 150,000 artworks, mm-hmm. specifically from the Louvre, were seized. A lot of them got, you know, recovered. Some of them still haven't. Some of them we'll never know. I mean, there's all kinds of rumors about trains built, you know, hidden in mountains that could contain who knows what. But to answer about how this compares to other things more recently, it does seem that globally there's a much more militarized, organized, strategic planning going on. It's not like, oh, that's pretty. You know, let's find a time when the stories, you know, will knock the security guard over the head, grab the painting, and run. This was broad daylight. There were people, you know, members of the public, thousands of them in the museum. They knew what they wanted. They took advantage of the situation. But it was planned. And I think that that's probably one of the scarier parts for anybody in any museum or who cares about, you know, these pieces of material culture, is that there's only so much protecting you can do if someone really wants to take it.
Right. There was a lot of meticulous planning involved, it seems, especially to be able to pull it off in under 8 minutes, as it seemed to happen. I mean, that...
There are a couple of places that people have pointed out where perhaps security measures could have been considered differently. Like, for example, there's a lot of windows right near the display cases where these mm-hmm. items were housed. And there was construction going on the streets outside, on that side of the building. And so it's my understanding they were able to move, the robbers were able to bring their own, like, cherry picker type construction equipment, whatever the French version is. It looked perfectly normal. They were mm-hmm. wearing construction garb, helmets, you know, vests, rose themselves up to the window and walked in. One might consider perhaps putting hundreds of millions of dollars of jewels in a room without windows. That seems
right.
slightly.
Or windows with bars on them that would take more time to cut through.
Yeah, there's, and you know, 2020 is easier in hindsight. There's chestnuts about that. But there's also been staffing issues. There have been France and their unions are very different than the way that America thinks about unions. And mm-hmm. there have been staffing shortages, and there have been, you know, some. There's no absolute concrete evidence that staffing shortages led to this. But I think if you want to be comprehensive, you have to look at it, you know, as a whole. And that is.
At all the factors.
Yeah. And that, can't see how, you know, not being fully staffed at all times is going to be helpful in a situation
yeah.
like this.
And, of course, the more security you have, the more coverage you have for these types of things. Mm-hmm. And going back briefly, in terms of, like, altering the building, I'm sure at times there's conversations regarding, because the Louvre itself is a historical building, regarding how much changes do we make for security and how much do we try and keep the building in its historical.
Oh, I'm sure there's, yeah, there must be. I mean, the Louvre was originally a palace, and I mean, it was mm-hmm. built a really long time ago. Like, we're talking 11th century. That's King Philip II. This mm-hmm. is back when we had England, like, had attacked and taken over Normandy. Mm-hmm. Like, and through a very long series of events and many, many royals, eventually Louis XIV decided to take Versailles as his main palace, right? And so the Louvre Palace was where he was going to store all his art. And then there was so much extra space, they began to house artisans and to give workshop space. And then, again, lots and lots of things happened, but it is culturally connected to the French people in a way that we probably think about the Lincoln Memorial or the Washington mm-hmm. Monument, the Smithsonian, right? It would be like someone going there and stealing our most precious treasures. Yes, it's jewelry, but it's heritage and mm-hmm. it's culture.
And just to mention, there are a few other semi-recent heists that have kind of happened that I saw some similarities to. One was the National Museum in Oslo in 1994. Two men climbed a ladder and broke into a window, and they stole The Scream by Edvard Munch. And they left a note saying, "A thousand thanks for your poor security." So I'm very interested to know if maybe the thieves here left anything behind that we're yet to hear of.
I'm sure they're keeping anything quiet right now. And I would love it. I would love it if this was an elaborate, some kind of prank, or if mm-hmm. there was, you know, even if it being a ransom. My biggest fear here, and I've read a lot about this over the past few days, and it does not seem to be a fear that is mine alone. Yes, $102 million worth of jewelry is a lot, but that is not taking into consideration the historical value, the cultural value. Just it's so much more than that. And it is very likely, or at least plausible, that these pieces either have been already or will be shortly melted down and sold for their component parts. Because right. $102 million in component parts, I mean, that cannot be
ignored.
And yeah. If that is what happened, I mean, they're gone. They're lost. We'll never, you know, not every piece was completely photographed. Not every piece has been, you know, fully historic. It would be a great loss to the whole world.
Absolutely. And that was going to be one of my next questions is, do you think the art / jewels will be recovered? And so obviously one of the options is that they'll be split up, melted down, and sold off for parts.
Yeah. And I mean, the other option is that somebody with enough money to fund something like this really wanted them. Mm-hmm. Or really wanted something, one thing in particular, and whatever. I do think that something like that is not outside, you know, it's possible. There's also many, many years of conversations between nations and France about who rightfully owns what pieces of historic art. Similar conversations have happened with the British Museum. Mm-hmm. And so I could see there being somebody feeling like, well, fair is fair. You know, we'll take yours, you've got ours. And I'm not saying that's what happened, but there are many possibilities that don't have to be them melting down and, you know.
Which would obviously be one of the least favorable outcomes. Well, Rachel, any closing thoughts regarding this heist that you'd like to share?
I really hope that it makes everyone here in our community think about the treasures that exist in our own museums. We have a lot of really wonderful facilities right here in Tallahassee that do a lot of really good work on very small budgets. And we have a lot of really creative people working really hard to make sure that the arts survive here in Tallahassee. And maybe something like this can be a reminder to our community to treasure what we have here and to protect it and to make sure that it's available for our children and grandchildren.
Absolutely. Well, Rachel, I want to thank you so much for joining me today to talk about this heist. I had an absolute great time, and I learned a lot about what had happened in Paris this past weekend. I hope the jewels are recovered, but thank you for sitting down and speaking with me.
I'm always happy to. I love talking about history and how it affects us all right now, anytime.
Unbothered is produced, edited, and hosted by Jason Acuna. Audio engineering by Taylor Cox and Evan Rossi. Executive producers Regan McCarthy and Lynn Hatter. And brought to you by WFSU Public Media.